first, I'm Beth and I'm an addict.
Hi, Beth.
I want to practice humility by offering an apology to everybody for being a little bit late coming down here and holding everybody up while I had to take a little break. So I'm sorry. That's humility to me, being able to say I'm sorry. My clean date's 12/27/07. And that wasn't my first clean date. And I bounced in and out of here. And the reason I bounced in and out of here is because I wasn't teachable. And I remember one of the times when I came in, because I'm not going to tell you like my whole story. All I can tell you is that I qualify, just like everybody else. I'm not going to tell you like how I used, because believe me, I used. I have some scars that I could show you to prove it, like we all do. But one of the times when the driver dropped me off from Co-Forge, he let me throw my suitcase in the house, and then he took me to the meeting. And Jim T. from Greensburg said to me at the meeting, do you have a sponsor, or do you need to get a sponsor? I'm like, what do I need to get a sponsor for? I taught the steps. What do I need to do that for? Because, see, in my past life, I thought I knew everything because I was a drug and alcohol counselor prior to my run as a junkie. And so when I got back from rehab and he said that to me, I was like, I don't need a sponsor because I taught all this stuff and I thought I knew everything. And guess where that got me? High. It got me high. And I wasn't teachable. I wasn't willing. I wasn't willing to be teachable. And so that rehab stint, it didn't work because I didn't work. And I wasn't willing, and I didn't have any humility, because I always, like, now one of my favorite phrases is get humble or you will crumble. And some people don't believe in those hokey sayings. I'm a firm believer in some of them because they work very well in my life. And getting humble or you'll crumble is one of the ones that worked very well in my life, because I had to be stripped down before I could be built back up. And I have to throw that I thing back out, because we built me back up. You know, and that's part of my humility, because before it was all I don't need nobody. I don't need nobody. I don't need anybody. Well, this is a we program. And I sure as hell didn't do this. We did. And I'm hard-headed. And that's why 12/27/07 wasn't my only clean date. It took me a minute to get that. And thank God that I did. And one of the reasons I did, and what I had to do, I was living in Greensburg and bouncing in around down New Kent, and somebody said to me, it was a guy I was dating who just happened to be an ex-client that I was using with at that time also. And he said to me, why don't you come down New Kensington to go to a meeting? I said, oh my God, I can't go to New Kent. Those were my clients. They might see me. He said, you better get some humility and get humble. I'm like, no, I don't want those people to see me. Those people. I don't want those people to see me. Because what I was doing was working so well. You know? Shoving a needle in my arm every day was working so well for me, you know, and going to jail and going to all these institutions in a minimal short period of time was working so well for me that why try something else? And so I went down, I decided, you know, because That's what some of us women do, and that's surely what I did, is, you know, follow a guy around, right? But I decided to take that advice. I went down, I went to New Kent, and I went to a meeting. And not that there was anything wrong with where I was either, but I went to one of those meetings down there in those places around those people, and I had to get real humble real quick and talk about where I was at in front of people that I was helping before. And it was a total role reversal for me. And I had to go around people that I was given help to, and I had to reach out to them and ask for help. And that was, at first it was humiliating, and I had to learn a big fat difference between humility and being humiliated. And I thank God that I did that today. Because that person that brought me to the rooms down there helped save my life. He's out running somewhere, and that's his business, you know. Maybe someday he'll come back in these rooms, but he helped save my life. We came up to this retreat 1 year and left and went and used. But the act of me getting humble and me getting some humility and reaching out to those people saved my life. Because when I reached my hand out, I did not get slapped. I got saved. And it became a wee thing. Because when I was running out on the streets, it was all about me and an I. And I had to learn the difference. And an I became we. And people lifted me up. And I found, you know, my greatest life through this program. Through the act of humility. That one small act of me going there saved my life, and that small act was the biggest act of my life. And that's the biggest example of humility in my life, was admitting that I didn't know everything and that I needed help. Because asking for help is the hardest thing that I ever had to do. Because I don't need nobody, I don't need nothing, and I don't need anything. And I still have trouble with that. I still struggle sometimes with that every day, asking for help. Just yesterday, putting up my tent, I was doing it myself. You know, Dwayne came over to try and help me. I'm like, I got this. And I'm like, you know what? Come on, grab some. Because, you know, I still have to remind myself that, like, I have help today, and I have to get humble, and when I don't, even a few years back, I broke my ankle because I have a whole bunch of problems. I have a neurological disorder. If you see me shaking. So I need a whole bunch of help. I have physical stuff. I've had five different surgeries. I have a lot of physical issues. I'm not going to go through all my woes and stuff. But anyway, a few years back, I broke my ankle. I'm going to have plates, pins, and screws put in it. And I needed help with everything. I needed help bathing from women in the program. I needed help getting around, all these things. Well, I didn't want to wait for help. I was going to do everything on my own. And then to the point, because I tried to, this is my perfect example of where I needed to, like, practice humility and had to reach out to women in my life because I couldn't do anything on my own because of all the other compounded problems in my life. Physical problems. It was really hard for me to get around. But I didn't want to wait, and I was going to do everything on my own, and I didn't want to ask for help, and I didn't want to get humble and say, look, you know, I really need help that day. But I ended up laying there naked in the middle of my floor with the broken walker all alone and could barely get to my phone. If that wasn't a hot lesson in look what you did by yourself, you know, because I couldn't just wait or make the phone calls to the people that were willing to help me because I was going to do this by myself, you know. And all it took was the phone call and another one of my friends that were recovering addicts were right there and said, look at you. You know, but that's like the visual image in my head. When you know, get humble or you will crumble. I sure as hell did crumble. I sure as hell did crumble right in the middle of the floor.
Yeah.
You know, literally. And at any point in my life, when I don't reach out or when I don't want to get humble, that's where I go, right in the middle of that floor. Boom. But that's why a we is so important in this program. Because we can together reach each other out. Reach and pick each other up. Sometimes literally. You know? But we have to pull each other up and ask for help. I had to get teachable because every time I thought I knew something, I got high. But we got clean. I have a clean day today that I've maintained for all those years because of you guys. Because of me coming here year after year and seeing faces again year after year. And because I was able to learn something today and because I have a wonderful sponsor in my life because I don't know everything. And when I don't, I call her and I ask her things. I'd have never asked the sponsor anything before. I'd have been like, what do I need that for? I can do this. And I'll tell you how to do it too. Even if I'm not doing it right, I'll tell you all about your life. And mine's a hot mess. You know? Because even before, if you opened the door to my house, it was a hot mess inside, but I could portray on the outside that everything was all right. But if you opened that door, you saw mounds of dirty laundry and the house was, you couldn't find a clean fork. I had to wash a fork to eat. You know? And me getting humble is telling you all about that stuff today. In Narcotics Anonymous, I had to relearn life. When they say rehabilitation, that's what I had to do. Even when I was that so-called counselor, I was telling everybody about their lives, but mine, you opened the door to it. It was a hot-ass mess. But fixing everybody else's. You know, but today I can get real about that. Because in order to heal, I had to get real. And, if I don't, and if I don't continue, I'll be laying in the middle of the floor. Naked. Stripped of everything. Metaphorically, but that's where I'll be. And I don't want to be there anymore. I want to be right here with you guys in this wonderful, woods, peaceful, celebrating another year of this retreat. I love coming here year after year. Seeing everybody's faces. And laughing and joking around the fire. And all those things. All because we can. And being able to reach out when I need to. And say, I need help. And I don't know how to do this. And I'm sorry, because for me, humility is all about that stuff. I'm sorry. I don't know how to do this. Can you show me? What should I do about this? Asking all those things and admitting those things and admitting when I'm wrong. Working some steps in my life because those are the things that taught me those things and taught me how to change from the inside out. And keep me practicing that spiritual principle. Thank God for that. Thank God for my weed. Thank God for my sponsor. Thank God for this program. And thank God for that person in my life that brought me to those people in New Kensington that brought me to this life. So grateful for that. I'm so grateful for the spiritual principle of humility because I wouldn't have this life without it. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Beth, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. We have a second speaker. I would like to introduce Donna L. from the Self-Esteem Group of N.A. in the Pasna area of N.A.
Oh, sorry. My name is Donna and I'm an addict. My clean date is 8/5/99. Thank you, Beth, for sharing. I learned a lot. This is a hard topic for me. I think it's because it is so personal. And I did the definition thing and looked in all the literature and both fellowships for their idea of what humility is about. I did a little bit of studying, you know, like 10 minutes, that's all. Because I know it, because I already knew it, you know. When I was in treatment, I remember my counselor very worried about, I know. I kept saying, I know. I knew the steps too. I read them. And I did them. You know, that was it. But seriously, when I think of humility, I think of a monk. That's my first image that comes to mind. A monk, you know, peaceful, unworldly, you know, just giving up everything, very humble life. Well, I'm far from that. However, I had to be stripped of everything to begin this journey. You know, I my holding on to tangible things kept me from here. And that's what I was taught growing up. I mean, I came from a family. My dad was very ill. He was schizophrenic. And we always had to have everything on the outside and inside our rooms, our house, perfect to hide all the crazy shit that was going on inside of us. And that's how I grew up. And that's how I continue to obsess about my outside world to make me feel better about my inside world inside of me, because I'm not well. And I learned through coming here and, you know, starting this process with baby steps, coming here first with the job. You know, when I first got analyzed or evaluated for treatment, it's like, name three positive things about yourself. The only thing I could say is work. You know, I'm a really good employee. I'm very organized. I'm dependable. In spite of using drugs since I was 12. I mean, I got away with it for so long. I mean, I went through like different phases. I started smoking weed and drinking and smoking cigarettes. And it progressed through the 70s to anything that I could get my hands on. Pharmaceuticals mostly, and acid. And then sort of plateaued off, but weed was always a staple. And then until the 80s, cocaine. And that was in my life till 99. So that was 20 years of doing cocaine. And for many, many years, I maintained until I found crack. But I still was like that excellent employee, you know, on cocaine, because I could do everything. And that's just the way it was. And for like 10 years, 15 years, I still had food. I had a house in the suburbs. I had this. I had that. I had two cars, a marriage. Everything on the outside looked perfect. But I was so fucked up, suicidal, you know, homicidal, just so low. I remember first thing one of the things I heard when I came here is you're an egotistical person with low self-esteem. That was me. Everybody thought, I was told this, and even though I perceived I was better than, I was accused of being better, feeling better than. But you don't know how I really feel about myself. I feel like shit. And, you know, my therapist one time did the same. She's in the fellowship. I just love her to death. But she said, you are better off than some. And I really didn't know those people because I come from the suburbs. But I got to know those people. My first rehab, I was like the only white girl in the middle of some real crackheads. I was just not. I was a suburban crackhead. You know, different. You know, the prostitute that's in jail and this and that. But I became all those people. And that was humbling for me to, you know, but I still looked the part of I got away with a lot of stuff, you know, so I could ride in the hood and do these things, but get away with it because I looked like the librarian or the teacher. But that's not the way it was, you know. And every time I think, you know, my first meeting, I heard about the people under the bridge, and I said, but I'm not there. I didn't really look at the inside and really how desperate and sick I was. But, you know, as it went, I kept coming back. I mean, I didn't even maintain any clean time ever. I just kept coming back and then ended up in the hospital trying to kill myself. And, you know, because I would, you know, I don't think I thought, you know, I never realized I had a problem until like the money ran out. Because I remember thinking one day, how much would I really need to earn or steal or borrow or con to maintain my addiction, you know, because I'd be at the Mac machine on a hot credit card waiting for 1201. You know, that's how I roll, because I always had some sort of plan going on, because I'm smart. And when you're smart, you can, like, manipulate. And, you know, but I had to lose all that shit. I mean, I had to, you know, crack took me to walk away from my house in the suburbs and my child, my family, and, you know, pursue the life I thought was where I belonged, in abandoned buildings. And, well, first I left with my car and everything that I could put in the trunk, and then I went to the places to sell that stuff. And then the car blew. It was a brand new car, but I never put oil in it. I mean, my husband always did that shit. You know, I couldn't ask for help. I didn't know. I says, well, it's only like 6 months old. I mean, I shouldn't need oil, but there's like 30,000 miles on it without an oil change. So like the brakes went and it was wrecked. I rented it out and it wrecked into some house. And I had to like atone for all that stuff. But they believed me, you know, cause I could get real and real serious and manipulate people. So I got out of it. And I kept getting out of things for a long time until, you know, the car was gone and all my ways and means were gone. And I still went to work. But until that was really taken away from me, because I eventually stole from my employer and got caught. And like I was an accountant. So I was stealing from my employer plus all these employees. I wrote checks. I did all this crazy shit. But it all came down and I had to lose that. And just, you know, losing all that. That was my identity. So it was closer I got to with those people. I became those people. And went into treatment and, you know, got help. But then I really realized, you know, at that time I was pregnant after I sat still for a minute, at almost 40, and pregnant coming to this fellowship. It was humiliating. You know, but then, you know, humility to me is actually you know, a really important principle that is needed in all of the steps. To, you know, the open-mindedness, the, you know, analyzing my positives and not exaggerating, or my lifestyle and not exaggerating. That is real important too, because I tend to exaggerate things. And to really tell the truth, and not a truth, but add a little spice to it. You know, that's how I like to tell a story. You know. And I see that trait in a lot of people right here. I mean, it's really easy to identify, because it's like me. But when I got here, you know, I was Miss Independent. I left my mom's house at 19, got married, paid my bills, paid all this stuff, had stuff, lived a sort of normal life. But, you know, and I'm really saying that's normal, not because I have an 18-year-old son, and I can't imagine him doing that, because he is so helpless. He can't do anything for himself. Seriously, he can't even, he started his college, and I'm mad at him. I mean, he's just going to community because he just skated through school. So he started college, and I had this big blowout with him. I said, I'm not driving you to school. You have to take the bus. So he gets on the bus, going to school. He has to take two buses. So I have the schedule for him. I give him, you know, got all the timings and all that for him, because I have to do this, make sure he gets there. But he's on the bus. He goes, Mom, I forgot my book bag. I'm like, what the fuck? So what do I got to do? I got to go meet him and drive him. I said, he's almost 19. I said, when I was 19, I was married. I had this and this and this, you know. I said, what the hell's wrong with you? But, you know, he's my NA baby, you know. And I'm, you know, I'm not perfect, believe me. And I'm seeing that now in children. But you know, when I got here, and I was so Miss Independent, and the first time I actually had to ask for help is when I hit the wall at my first institution and had to get help from my mother. Because I was so far away from her, I would never ask her. See, she was like me, in a way. She was a strong woman. But I didn't admire her because she dealt with this baggage, like my dad, who I never really liked or had any feelings for. I thought we could do better without him. You know, let's just let him go. But she hung on to him until he died. And, you know, I just resented that. I had a lot of resentment towards my mom, and I would never ask her for help. But the only time kind of help she could really provide to me is financial. And that was what it was all about, the appearance. Oh, you have to pay this bill. When I had my charge card so far up, you know, I was using charge cards to pay charge cards and all this cycle. And, you know, that's how she was going to help write a check to help me pay my bills. But, you know, meanwhile, my son, who, my first son, with my husband, he was crazy. He was trying to kill himself at 7. He was off the, you know, I don't know what exactly his diagnosis was, because we had him in treatment. But I start looking at this, you know, this was like my life starting over. But I blame my mom, you know. If it wasn't for you, maybe, you know, breeding, I think I said, with my dad, you know, I blamed her and my dad for having, you know, for my son's mental illness. I was just so angry. But, you know, but I had to, you know, coming here, I had to look at, you know, all these things. And I'm not unique. This story isn't unique. It's here. I mean, I've heard it a lot of times before. So, you know, but we can recover from this. And, you know, but I still was the lone wolf, because I was, you know, it was different. And, you know, when I finally did get this, I came and I just had enough. And I realized it was an inside job, and I had to start getting help from people, from you. Not when my first treatment center, I demanded somebody with a degree. I didn't want one of these people that I was smarter than to teach me about this program. I want to check your credentials. You know? I was such a joy in treatment. You know? He just loved me. And then my first experience I didn't have no God. And I was in this program, and I was like the only white woman. And black people were very spiritual and very fundamentalist, the Bible and this and that. Well, not me. I can't do this NA thing. I went rational recovery, if anybody ever heard of that. They had me a special book. I was rationally recovery. That was easier to understand. That thing is so complicated. I look at it now, I'm like, oh my God, what did I do? This is my first introduction to the program. Look it up on Google. You'll see what I'm talking about. I mean, it's really a crazy thing, but I was different. And but I came here, still had that independent thing, you know. And but my last treatment center, you know, it was a little bit better each time. I think it was like a 10 later. I knew I had enough. And I had enough taste. I did manage to get about a year clean. And I had a little bit of foundation here that I walked away. I already had my second son, who was my NA baby. And I had a relapse, you know, after he was turned one, after I did a 6-month program and then a 1-year pen free program. But in the middle of that, I was using. And it just kept getting worse. And I was very humble, I thought, then. You know, I was taking a bus because I was poor and had a baby and a stroller and this and that. Getting on the bus and going to treatment, going to psych treatment, going to drug treatment, going to meetings. And, I mean, I thought that was being humble. But, you know, when I got out the last time, I remember how, you know, I also have some physical things going on, and there's always been going on in my life. And I really find more shame with that kind of stuff and don't want to, like, talk about it. And I get like, oh, if somebody talks about their physical stuff. So I don't want to talk about mine because I'm like, oh, come on, we all got shit. You know, because we all got shit. But, and I really don't want to act like I have any shit. But I do have shit wrong with me, especially as I get older. But I remember, like, being in this treatment, and I had a car. And they were making us take these buses. And I had this 2-year-old, 50-pound baby. And I was lugging this baby everywhere on these buses. I'm like, I just got a car. I have a car. I can make my life so much easier. I have people. I have phone numbers. And I went, you know, I left. And I showed up the next day at outpatient, which they thought was a surprise. They were totally shocked because they thought I was going to use. Because really, I would have thought I was going to use. It was check day. But I said it was my son's birthday, my older son, who I just started getting back into a relationship with. He, you know, we were estranged for a long time because I left the marriage. And but I didn't use. And I did give my son a birthday present, and I did go to a group. But like 6 months after, you know, I did end up getting arrested like 6-7 months after that for stuff that happened during my relapse. And, you know, after that was all adjudicated at court, I had 15 charges, felony drug charges and manufacturing and all this crap, which I, when I asked for help, the lawyer, I trusted the lawyer and he let me charge, or I pleaded guilty to all of them. And because of that, well, part of my punishment was losing my license for 7 years. And that took away a lot of independence. So when I, you know, here I get to the point, I'm in recovery, I'm doing well, I have a car, I can go to meetings. But that also enabled me to be more of a loner and not ask for help, because I'd go to a meeting and leave. And, you know, when you take a bus, you have to stick around or ask for help. And I wouldn't, like, ask for help to the meeting, because I lived outside of the urban, you know, the inner circle. You know, I'm from the inner city, and that's where I went to meetings. And I didn't like suburban meetings. I felt more comfortable in the urban meetings, because I have a black child. And I just felt more comfortable. And but it did make me, you know, reach out, ask for help, even just get to know more people that really are like me. and you know, I still go there in my head, you know, but because of what my consequences of my addiction, you know, my, even though, you know, I'm college educated, I'm a cleaning lady, and that's what I do, but that's what I can do. It fits me, that ego shit, I feel like fucking shit sometimes, but that's what I do. And my 18-year-old says, but Mom, you know, things, choices you make, he's my, he says this shit like I get from you guys. And it's accepting who I am, what I am capable of, what I do, how I provide for, and everything. You know, and some days it's better, some days it's not. You know, because that doesn't certainly contribute to my self-esteem. But, you know, I do all right. I mean, I have a house, I have a car. You know, my kid is good. He's not in trouble with the law. I raised him properly, alone. He was a product of my addiction. He doesn't have a dad. He never had a father figure. And I was always honest with him. The last part of my story about humility, I've been thinking how to really incorporate this, because it is part of my story. It's my older son died from a heroin overdose. And like, to look at, you know, really look at that situation and how I really feel about it, and how that I could have done better, didn't do what I did, didn't do, you know, all these guilt things going on with that, and coming here, and or even other places where it was, he was a junkie, you know, I'm judging your feeling toward me. I mean, here it's okay, but on the outside world, you know, other people lost their kids because of cancer, auto accidents, just whatever, suicide, it's the same thing, you know, you lose a child, it's just like, you can't recover, but, you know, I'm recovering, you know, I didn't have to use, it's 3 years ago, next month, and it's still fresh, and I still look, and, you know, wonder what I could do wrong, but basically, you know, I've made amends, you know, I made amends through my other child. Making amends requires humility. You know, recognizing that I do have character defects, you know, and the fifth step is seeing them on paper, and then, you know, knowing what they are, and humbly asking God to remove them. But humility is a real component in every step. And it's one that I think is overlooked a lot. I mean, you have to dig deep for this shit sometimes. You know, it irks me when somebody says, there's 12 principles in the 12 steps. I said, no, there's not. You know, that bothers me. I said, look it up. There's so many more. There's like 31. Because I know that shit. Yeah, I belong here, you know. And I'm glad this is over so I can enjoy the rest of the weekend. But thank you for listening and asking me to share.